This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Travel and Events Group, voted Best Tour and Transport Operator in the New South Wales Tourism Awards. If you want to know why they're award-winning, why not check out one of their great beer experiences, like their half-day or full-day tours of Canberra. You know, for the longest time, Canberra has been known for two things: legal fireworks and... Oh no, I can't mention that second thing, can I? Questacon? Let's say Questacon. But it should be known for three things, really. And that third thing is its ever-expanding beer scene. So if you'd like to check out the great beers of the nation's capital, book a tour now at daves.com.au. Sessionable. Welcome everyone to Sessionable.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Oh, you guys aren't even drunk. Come on.
I'm not drunk. I'm
not yet.
I'm sick. I got the post-Gabs flu.
One of those.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Adrian didn't even go to Gabs.
Yeah, I seem to have the post-Gabs flu as
just,
well.
His body's so attuned to getting sick at this time.
So this time of
body
year,
clocks always. Yeah. Yeah.
It's episode 100.
100.
Congratulations, guys.
It's been 84 years since we started. We started, just over 5 years ago now.
It's been, which is...
It's taken us a long time to get to 100.
Yeah. Well, when you average it out, it's actually not that.
We were a bit irregular at the start.
Yeah, but about 20 episodes a year is what we're on now. It's, every 2 weeks, and that's,
Yeah. I think Ale of a Time started after us, and they beat us to 100 by about 10 episodes or something. Something like that.
So,
hi, Luke and Dave.
What are we doing for the 100th episode?
I figure we'll do what we did on episode one and just sit around with some beers we could grab from the bottle shop and just talk shit.
Well, episode one, we talked a bit about beer epiphanies.
I guess so.
I was thinking... We've been doing this for 5 years. I think it'd be fun to sort of just drink some beers and talk about a couple of things from the last 5 years of beer. We don't have to be too in-depth, but just...
Is there enough to talk about?
I don't think anything happened,
right?
Yeah.
Well, in that time, I've quit and rejoined two pubs.
How many places have you worked
at? I've left... In those 5 years, I've left the Royal Albert three times. and I've been hired by the Tap House twice. So,
I'm not going to say it.
When are you going back to the pump house?
Oh, yeah. Dude,
that's
bring it back full circle.
No, I'm actually just about to move up to Mission Beach in Far North Queensland.
Just regressing.
So thinking back to the first episode... Where did we record that?
Tom's house.
Was that your parents' house?
Yeah, it was my parents' house. Yeah. Do you remember? Because Mum walked in on us. She was
were we doing?
We were recording podcasts.
Oh, okay.
She walked in and she's like, oh, do you guys want anything?
Oh, that's sweet.
Mum, we're recording a podcast.
I think awesome. That
was cut out. Yeah. You're embarrassing me from my friends.
Mom.
If I was editing the podcast, I wouldn't have cut that out.
I think I was editing.
Yeah, hence why it's not that this is. Episode one, we talked about beer epiphanies.
Yep.
Do you remember what beer epiphanies were?
I think I kind of said Stella / Quack, maybe.
Right.
I don't know.
I think I said White Rabbit Dark Ale or Mountain Goat. I think it was Mountain Goat Hightail, actually.
Yeah. Hightail?
One of the two. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember which one I said. It might have been like a Nugna or a Rogue, possibly.
Yeah, Rogue sounds about right.
Yeah?
Maybe it was Nugna. I don't know.
Captain Stig from... Maybe it was either the...
Oh, it could have been.
Or was it the two captains
No cheating, Tom.
Look it up. I'm not going to remember it.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess and say it's either Captain Stig from Rogue, the IPA, or it was the two captains from Nugna.
So, it's got here Mountain Goat Hightail Ale, which I think is me.
Yeah.
Pavel Quack, which I think is you, Adrian.
Yeah, I think so.
Nugna, two captains.
Yeah, there you go.
Spitfire.
Yep, Spitfire for Shepherd's Name.
Yeah, that was me.
Nice.
And I think on that episode, we drank Thoroughgood's Scrumpy Sweet Cider.
Oh, I was thinking about bringing a Thoroughgood's. Damn it.
Oh, you should have done that.
I haven't seen much Thoroughgood's out lately.
No. Yeah.
We drank a Bear Republic Racer 5.
Oh, I can't even get those in Australia anymore.
And we drank a Riverside 44 Amber.
Well, how about...
How's that?
Yeah,
That's really fucking weird.
How's
that's
that for also, a segue,
yeah,
hey?
Yeah. So what beer are we drinking at
So
the
we're
moment?
Drinking Akasha's latest seasonal, which is the Red Kelly Red IPA. Which actually reminds me a lot of
it does. It's, Riverside 44. You can see I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Really caramelly, kind of that toffee sweetness.
Yeah,
on
like
the nose.
Crystal malt in a nice way.
Yeah.
Typical. Oh, not typical, but you know it's an Akasha beer with its hop profile, but it's not actually. I don't know. Are you guys finding it very hoppy at all?
Not super.
It's got hop. It's hoppy enough.
It's there, but I think the malts dominate.
I think it's also very well balanced between malt and hops for an Akasha beer. Not that they are imbalanced, but they're very much a hop forward brewery.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one's got a lot more malt character than a lot of their beers do.
Would you call it an IPA?
I'm not sure.
I don't think they're wrong in calling it an IPA. I think it fits, but I don't know if that's what I'd call it.
I don't know. Like when I think of an Akasha IPA, I'm not saying I don't enjoy beer. I really like this beer. I think it's really nice. Yeah. And I think 44 is a really good analogy for what this beer is. But yeah. I don't know. Maybe just because I had their Gabs beer the other day. And
what's their Gabs beer?
It's a really fucking big IPA.
It's the quad IPA. Something stupid, right?
Yeah. What percent?
I don't know, but it
13,
was 12%, and it was the first beer I had at Gabs in Melbourne.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Why don't we just quickly mention recent news with Akasha? There's been a slight change in ownership.
I think it really
hasn't been bought out. It's been bought in, if anything.
Yeah.
I think one of the partners left, and the other brewery employees have bought part shares of the company.
Yeah, I want to find out some more about how they've structured it, because I think it's really important. It's something we haven't seen a lot in Australia.
So Stone and Wood
was the other one I was going to say. But
they're employee owned, which
is... it's a really big model in the States of employees having ownership in the brewery. New Belgium for probably one of the ones that really started it.
Yeah.
And I think when you work for a year...
Yeah, you have options or something.
You get options and you get a bike. So you're given a bike.
Sweet. That's awesome.
And then, so every year is a different bike, so you can tell how long someone's been with the company with which model bike they ride.
That's pretty cool.
And I think it's every 5 or 10 years you get a trip to Belgium.
Sick.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Deschutes is another one, which I know has a really big employee ownership structure as well.
I think it's a really good model, and it's one that I think hopefully we see more of in Australia, because it does multiple things. It brings your employees closer, which is always good. If you have employees that you trust and they trust you and you all have the same vision, it's only good for your business. But also it's a good sort of safeguard against being bought out.
Yeah,
right?
It's a good alternative.
I don't know if that's the motive of it. I think
from a consumer point of view, from someone in the industry who values independence, I love seeing that, because it is...
The interesting thing that I think is, like, all the breweries that I've known, typically like the ones in the US, and Stone and Wood's taken that model as well, they've got to a certain point and become quite a large brewery and then instituted this.
Yeah.
Akasha's...
Still quite small.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not saying that they're not... You know, they're doing amazing things and they've got their beer out there, but from a size of brewery point of view and amount of employees, they're not that... bigger company. So I'm really intrigued to see how they've done it.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really, really cool. But I just think congratulations and well done.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's good to see that it's kind of stayed in rather than being bought out.
Yeah. It's always good.
I guess that's one of the other trends of the last 5 years, that a lot of the breweries that we kind of grew up on our beer journeys with have been bought out, like Feral and
Well, I mean, just
Mountain
talking
Goat
about those epiphanies.
Four Pines.
Yeah.
Talking about those epiphanies we were talking about, Mountain Goat's a big one. Yep. Even Nugna, right?
Like
Nugna got bought out, yep.
So it's a worldwide trend.
You know,
it's not,
and, origin story of the podcast being Birra del Borgo.
Yeah, there you go. Have we told that story on the podcast?
Yeah. Why don't you tell it?
All right, so...
I'm pretty sure we have, but
I can't remember it, so... Yeah.
So the impetus for actually starting this podcast, it was... Adrian and I had sort of discussed doing a beer podcast, just, very randomly here and there. And we were at an event at the Tap House on the middle level, and it wasn't Ale Stars, but it was a Q&A with Leo from Birra del Borgo. And the Tap House hadn't organized anyone to run the Q&A, so... Leo's just sitting up the front. We're all drinking his beers, but no one's asking any questions because there's no moderator. And Leo...
It's fucking awkward.
It was really awkward. We're sitting there. And all of us are sitting there. And then basically Liam's on our table and he's like, I've had enough of this. And he just got up and started moderating it.
I don't think he like got up the front, but like he just started
asking
all the questions.
Yeah, but also you were starting to take questions and you were doing a really good job of interviewing Leo. And Adrian and I looked at each other and was like, I think Liam's a good option. And
the funny thing was I think I was like literally just got back from Rome 3 days before
I think
that
that's right,
And so I actually like had a lot, because It was funny because before the thing started, I was like, I think I met Leo the day before because he came around to the bottle shop or something.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I just came back from Rome yesterday. He's like, oh, cool. Where'd you go? I was like, oh, I went to this awesome place called Beer and Food. He's like, oh, yeah, I own that. I was like, oh, yeah. And then I went to this awesome bar called... He's like, yeah, I own that. I was like, oh, fuck. Like, everywhere I went, like, he had his hand into it to some degree. So,
But I just remember you, doing a really good job of moderating and interviewing him. And it was like, well, I think that's the missing link to the podcast. And, and that was it. That would have been 5.5 years ago at this point.
Jeez, that's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's scary.
And here we are, still here drinking beer and talking shit. Yeah.
Wearing maroon hoodies. And
Leo's still in Australia, is he? Is he?
I haven't seen him. Actually, I don't know if he's been back since the sale.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know Brooks is still at Nomad, but I haven't seen Leo.
Yeah.
I figured he would still like come by and
I think he's
kind
just,
of check out Nomad.
He's got still a bit of cash and he's on holidays.
Yeah,
I think,
maybe that's not.
Because he also has a stake in... the chain, what's the chain
called? Experience It?
No. The restaurant chain, shop chain.
Italy.
He's got a share in that, doesn't he? Or is that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's, the Italy in New York has a beer door borgo, or it's got its brewery that Brooks used to brew at and he set up. So, I guess so. I went to the one in Florence when I was in Italy, there was like half of the beers were Del Borgo beers, yeah.
Yeah. I was when I went to the one in Munich. There were a bunch of Nomad beers there, which was really cool.
Nomad's actually sending a lot of stuff.
Which is interesting. Yeah.
Probably one of the breweries sending the most stock to the US at the moment, which is really interesting.
Mm. I know when I was over in New York last year, there was a bunch of like Freshie on tap, and it was kind of cool to see. Yeah, and a bunch of their bottles.
Yeah. Was it Four Pines or Mountain Goat this week?
Four Pines, IPA.
Yeah, that announced that they're going to the US.
I missed that.
Yeah.
So they're putting, I think it's, I don't know if the recipe's the same. The can looks exactly the same as the Fresh and Season cans. It's that green can, but it's a tall can.
Yeah.
And it's called Down Under IPA, and the Down Under is upside down.
They like using a similar recipe to
I just saw this before we started recording, so I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing.
I saw the headline, but I didn't read it.
Is it like Shelton Brothers or something who's distributing them, or how that's going
I'm
not sure.
I'd assume it would be...
Of course, it'd be the
AB InBev, right?
Yeah, it'd be part of the big collect. High end.
High end.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't have get a chance to read the article in full, but I just saw the can, and it looks like a very nice can. It's that same can that we all know. And
speaking of Four Pines, I actually had to go to Manly to do some training
for you
this week. And I
that was sarcastic, by the way.
Straying some stuff at a pub in Manly, and got to catch the ferry over and saw the Four Pines bar on the ferry.
Yeah, did you drink any Four Pines on
the ferry? No, I've been really sick this week. Yeah. So
wait, is it the regular ferry that has a Four Pines bar? Fast ferry.
Four Pines have a deal with Transport New South Wales.
Okay.
And they are running the canteens on the ferries.
Yes, sick.
And I think they're not doing all of them just yet, but it's all the Manly ones, all the big ferries.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe there's a possibility that they will just run the canteens on all of the ferries.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Hopefully they bring it to buses and trains as well.
That'd be awesome. So you could get they had food and stuff like that as well. Yeah, but yeah, cool. You could get some Four Pines tinnies and stuff like that on the ferry. And actually, the interesting thing was I was waiting for the ferry to pull up, and all the people were getting off the ferry at Circular Quay, I noticed that there's the little cool room actually on the ferry's, what do you call the terminal, I guess?
Yeah, the wharf.
And so as the people were changing off, the Four Pines staff member was running a little cool room on the wharf and restocking beers and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
so
nice.
Cold Sweet. Storage on the wharf, yeah. Wow. So, yeah, I thought that was really cool. I think if I was on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon getting the ferry back to Sydney from Manly, I'd be
Can
at
you imagine
back
if that
deck.
Was the case 5 years ago when we used to do our trips over?
Over to Four
I don't
Pines.
Think we needed
a We didn't need more beer,
But, it was really cool. And it was nice because I think it was, Tuesday night, and so they were testing all the lights for Vivid. So it's about 8 o'clock at night coming back.
Yeah.
You can, imagine sitting out in the ferry with the lights going on. Having a tin in your hand, it would have been a
pretty good
experience if I wasn't suffering a slow death. But it was good.
Speaking of Vivid, the new James Squires, the Squires Landing.
Yeah, opened on Thursday.
Yes.
Yeah.
With some pretty amazing views of the harbour.
Looks amazing as well. Just the space looks incredible.
I haven't been yet. I couldn't go.
I've just seen photos. It looks just like the most stunning setup.
Yeah. I was talking to a few of the Squires team last weekend about it, and I was joking, saying that I need to buy all the brewers' belts because, like, they're literally the brewery's encased in like a glass 360 room almost. So I was joking that all their butt cracks were hanging out. So they need to buy them all belts.
Overalls.
But it's a two-story glass, like, it's amazing. It's a part of the overseas passenger terminal.
Yeah.
So they've got a whole bunch of tables out in the forecourt. So pretty much you can sit on the water.
Yeah.
And have a beer in your hands.
Did you get a chance to try their Gabs beer? The
Shipwrecks? Yeah. I had a cheeky growler of it about 4 weeks ago, actually.
Just a cheeky growler? Yeah.
It's all kosher.
Is that the one based on like a really old recipe that they found in the Shipwreck?
So I didn't try it at Gabs, but I have had it previously. They had another beer at Gabs, which I quite liked as well. But the Shipwrecks, or the Wrecked, I think it's called.
Something like, or the Wreck or something.
It's a really nice malty beer. It was really nice.
Cool.
There's nothing like really different. It's got a slightly funkier yeast character to it. But it's just a really nice dark ale. I actually thought it was really nice well beer. I think all the beer nerds will, you know, it's not a massively hot beer or, you know, funky or sour or anything like that. So it's I really liked it. It was nice. Yeah.
Cool. Hmm. Well, what are we drinking right now?
Well, I think we all had a mission to bring a beer.
Yeah.
And if I had to think about a beer over the last 5 years that I've probably drunk the most of, this would be it. And if I had to say that if I could only drink one beer for the rest of my life, this would probably be it. I brought...
That's actually a good question.
Saison DuPont. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the right Saison DuPont is in the tall green bottles, not the short brown bottles, because they don't taste anywhere near the same.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that. Literally, I've done a side-by-side.
Yeah.
And it's one of the beers, one of the very few beers where I'll say slight light strike is acceptable and actually enhances the flavor of the beer.
I don't necessarily agree, but I don't think this one's light struck though.
No, I'm gonna say
I'm actually pretty shocked at, because it's like you get a pretty sometimes you can get a pretty bad strike, right? Mm. No pun intended on the Saison DuPonts when the green bottles.
I always buy my Saison DuPont from Bucket Boys, because if there's one person who loves Saison DuPont more than me, it's John. Yep. If there's one venue in Australia, I reckon they probably sell the most and move through the most Saison DuPont.
So it's going to be fresh all the time.
So I've seen how much John gets in an order, and it's pretty scary. And they don't sit around long enough because they stock them in the bar.
Yeah.
They have them in the bottle shop. And for me, it's just like, it's a, you know, a 750ml bottle that's under $20. I think it's normally around the $16, $17 mark. It's ridiculously good value.
Yeah. I think, it was about that today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we talked with Ben Krause recently about Saisons. I'm not sure if it was on air recorded, but he was saying, like, you know, people make Saisons and they don't necessarily, they just make Saisons because the yeast is easy to use and it doesn't necessarily represent the classic style. And I think, If people want to brew a Saison, they should have this as a reference.
Well, this is the reference, isn't it?
Like pretty much. You read BJCP, it's almost written for this beer.
Because when a Saison's good, it is DuPont, you know. It is that kind of level good.
Yeah, this beer is just... I love it so much, always.
So do I. Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, if you speak to people in the beer industry or just beer people and they go, what's your favourite beer? And they go, Saison DuPont. You're like, yeah.
Yeah, you get it.
You're right.
Get it.
Yeah.
Did you see that meme about, you know, the one with the wrestlers arguing?
Yeah.
I thought it was Duck Dynasty.
Oh, it's Duck Dynasty,
isn't
it?
I think it's Duck Dynasty.
The Duck Dynasty arguing.
I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, with the couple throwing the chairs.
Rednecks.
Yeah. And there's a great one where it's about that and, like, one of them's complaining that all beers just have to have a bunch of different sweeteners added, and they're all New England, like, rich in,
New England pastry stouts.
Yeah, basically. and then the other's like, well, beer can be fun, you know. Why just let people make what they want to make? And the other's like, you'll never appreciate, like, a good Saison DuPont. And it's very funny.
I'm so that guy.
Yeah. Well, for me, I kind of agree with both of them.
Yeah, I like that meme.
It's a good meme.
So, yeah, I think, you know, interesting looking back at what my epiphany beers were back then.
Whereas now, like, it's almost like, I don't know if you guys agree, but I feel like I've almost had multiple epiphanies over the years.
I think I remember saying that in the episode. Yeah.
I think you did, yeah.
I think, and I'm constantly having epiphany beers, but if I look over the past 5 years, then this is probably my favorite beer that I've had.
Because for me, like, I when you were saying this, if you had to have one beer for the rest of your life, if it was Saison de Bon, I'd be very happy. For me, I'd probably go Schneider Weiss Original, though. That's probably what I'd settle on.
Yeah, I think for me, that sweetness would get a little bit too much for me at times.
For me, I've got a sweet tooth. Like, I'm, you know.
What about you, Adrian?
Weirdly enough, like, I used to answer that question quite easily and say Feral Watermelon Warhead, but I'm not sure.
You get the heartburn after a little while.
Like, no, but you
same
didn't.
Same reason I wouldn't say Rodenbach.
At its best, I don't think you did. Like, I think it just had that really nice balance of that fruitiness with a little bit of tartness, you know. And if you're having it, you know, just as a session.
And we have dispelled
you can have a lot of
the fact that you can actually still get drunk off Watermelon Warhead.
We myth busted that.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if that's the answer anymore. I think
it's a good one though,
and I think Warhead has changed a bit. I don't think it's as sour as it used to be,
but also its main component is a fruit which is going to be seasonal, and you could never have that beer the same.
Yeah, it can't. There's almost no way to achieve consistency with a beer that relies on a fruit that much. Like, it's, yeah.
I don't know. Like, for me, yeah, it depends, like, how I'm feeling at the time. Right now, Tropic Thunder's fucking awesome. I'm loving that.
Dutchess, Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always love Rodenbach Grand Cru, you know.
Yeah.
But, like,
do you know what?
Thirsty Crow Vanilla Milk Stout.
Oh, yeah, that's
whenever
the one.
That's
that
on,
could be it.
I'll probably have that. Yeah. You know, that's probably my most current answer. But I don't know if that's going to be my answer two weeks from now.
Well, that's about what your answer is right now, yeah.
Yeah.
Ownership aside, like, Feral Hop Hog would be a beer I could drink every day for the rest of my life, I think. Assuming you get it fresh,
we
right?
We were talking about this with Tom Delmont, right? That from Fixation, that still to this day, like, fresh Feral Hop Hog is one of the most glorious things in life.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of beers where I could see myself having it. For the rest, like, having that as my only beer. It is. I have been thinking a lot about what my favorite beers are. That you listeners missed the air quotes that I put up, because it's a tough question, right? Like,
I get asked that question a lot. What's your favorite beer?
Yeah.
I just say it just depends what mood I'm in. It changes all the time.
Exactly.
But I realize, and I've probably said this on the podcast, I've been very much steering towards beers like DuPont, like classic European styles.
Yeah,
so it's like DuPont, Schneider Weiss, Rodenbach, Cantillon,
London Pride.
I mean, I miss the...
you haven't had it from the can
yet? I haven't had it from the can yet.
Should have bought one today.
No, because they were at London Pride.
ESB.
Well, yeah, but I wanted the London Pride.
Yeah.
I was thinking about getting ESB.
My bad.
Yeah. I mean, I do love London Pride, don't get me wrong. Yeah, that's... And again, it is up there with that same sort of genre of beer. Those
I didn't say London Pride because it's what we can get here, but if I was in London right now, I would not be going for London Pride as my first beer.
No.
But
yeah,
it'd be something along that vein, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to take a break?
Take a quick break, finish our DuPonts.
Yeah.
Sessionable. And we're back with a new beer, which is an old beer, really.
Well, it's a new old beer.
It's a new release of an old beer.
Yeah, so this is Batch Brewing's 1,000th batch, basically. It's a version of their American Pale Ale, which they have changed the recipe up a bit. So their American Pale Ale uses some imported ingredients, a bunch of US hops.
Cascade.
This version, the 1,000th batch, they've gone all Aussie ingredients. So it's Aussie malt and Aussie Cascade, I think, are the main, what it's made with mainly. So slightly different. I've actually had quite a bit of their American Pale Ale recently. Last Saturday, Adrian and I enjoyed a bunch of cans.
Oh, yeah. We had some cans at the AFL.
Yeah, the SCG.
Not inside the stadium, but outside in the kind of
food truck area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Batch had set up a stall outside as part of, I think, Broadsheet and the Swans were putting together a bit of a little food and drink precinct.
Which is pretty cool, actually.
They should do that every game.
Yeah, they should.
They really should.
From what I heard, the Swans really want to do it every game, but they're being met with some resistance
from
the SCG.
Well, it took away sales from inside the ground, well, right?
I think food-wise, it definitely did. I don't think it would. Bev-wise, I honestly don't.
I don't think it would have.
But it just goes to show you that people actually would prefer to eat some decent food.
Yeah,
like,
well, it's not just like it was decent food, but it was also a lot. It was reasonably priced as well. Like
poutine pies, like come on.
I was actually a bit disappointing.
Oh really?
Yeah, I had it, but
I had some really nice like fried chicken. You know, like that was really nice. It wasn't just the poutine pies. It was a bunch of food trucks. Some really cool stuff.
Yeah, a lot of good venues.
Yeah.
Do you think Four Pines were a bit pissed off that like two home games into having beers at the grounds, Batchers outside slinging beer?
I think they're still Four Pines are still selling way more than Batcher. Like I don't
probably
think
too busy swimming in money to care.
No, but I mean, it's not a bad thing having both. Like it's like you go from at the start of the season we had zero options for good beer at the ground, and then last game we had Four Pines inside and Batch outside. It's like I'm feeling pretty happy to be a Swan supporter at the SCG. Like it's
then the cans that they had for the APA at the game were pretty cool. Cool as well.
Yeah.
So it was Batchman with the Swans Guernsey on.
Yeah.
Well, no, with a generic AFL red and white V.
Red white V.
Let me think. Who else has a red and white V?
No, but actually, it was funny because apparently the Batch guys were talking to some guys from the AFL, and they were like, "This is perfect because you are not infringing at all, so we don't have to talk to you at all." Like, literally, the AFL came up to them and said, "Good. This is good. We're happy with this." Like,
well, I mean, the thing is, as well as Batch is like Batch. As a brewery, are massive Swans fans.
Yeah. And Chris, you could tell that at the game. Like,
Andrew is a massive Swans fan. Chris goes to a lot of games. The rest of the staff, like...
Yeah, all Swans fans.
I mean, you and I have gone out with, like, gone to the games, not sat with the guys, but, like,
Like,
staff,
before and after,
They're all massive Swans fans.
Oh, we sat with them at the pre-season games at Henson Park.
So, I think, you know, it's not like they're just looking for an in. This is something they're actually really passionate about, which I think is really cool as well.
So, I mean, that's a cool thing that has happened over the last 5 years. Is over the last 5 years, it's been a slow thing. We've seen it at other stadiums.
And last year.
This year, we've seen it happen in Sydney a bit more. But
no, across the country in the last year.
Yeah, they had two birds at the Etihad game for the
Stomping
Western Bulldogs.
Sorry, not Etihad.
Was it MCG?
Marvel Stadium.
No, it's still Etihad. It's still Etihad until September.
No, it'll always be Marvel Stadium now.
That can be another
Stomping
podcast.
Ground with their pop-up
with their,
bar
at the Melbourne at City.
Melbourne City. Even their pop-up bar at the airport.
You've got the whole
Gage Rose
doing the big thing. They've got the contract for Perth Stadium, which is huge.
Gage Rose the doing the Rugby Sevens. Yender and now the beer provider for Wallabies.
Yeah, and I think, was it, who was it for the Queensland Rugby? Was it Newstead?
Newstead, yeah.
You've got the whole Wellington Phoenix thing with Garage Project and Friends. The Central Coast Mariners in
Sixth
Canberra.
String.
Bedspoke was in
Central Coast do some games in Canberra, and they did some Bedspoke beers there.
Oh, but they did a beer with Six Strings as well.
Essendon brewed a beer with Colonial.
Colonial venue in Melbourne's the official fan hub for
Essendon.
There's a lot been happening. It's something we've talked about a lot because we're all sports fans and beer fans, and they are things that go very well together. But it's always frustrating when they don't, and we're starting to see them go together more. And
I just hope that the momentum keeps rolling.
Yeah, same.
Because it seems like a lot is happening just in the past year itself.
Mm. I mean, just the fact that, yes, I know it's owned by AB InBev, but the fact that I get like
a good beer.
A schooner of Four Pines Pale at the SCG.
Full strength.
Yeah. It's not cheap. It's $11 for a schooner. But when you consider like Great Northern's $9 for a schooner, it's a pretty good deal. Like comparatively, it's a bargain.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth that extra $2 a schooner.
I think, that's the other thing, speaking of Wayward and Batch and everything, is just the rise of the brewpub model, especially in West Sydney, but also in Melbourne and over in WA and South Australia, and I guess Queensland. I'm not really...
No, I think it's a thing in Brisbane. Like, you look at Green Beacon and Newstead.
Aether, Green Beacon.
So it's just everywhere, just places figuring out that having their own
money.
Venue.
Yeah, it's
a good way to make money, but also like it's a good way to move your beer.
But that's it. They're linked. Like you move more beer and you make more money from the beer you move. Great, because you're eliminating the middleman. Focus on your brew pub first before you focus on distribution.
But like, the cool thing about NOS is every single brewery is independent in the NOS. No one's been bought out.
Except for James Squire.
Oh, James Squire. You know.
But
also, even mention James Squire, but actually, you know what?
Yeah.
James Squire do a lot for the other breweries.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, yeah.
James Squire actually sit on the NOS Brewers Association and they do a lot. So, you know, I think you can separate James Squire and the guys from James Squire from the rest of line to some degree.
Sure. But also at the same time, like James Squire was never bought out. Like they've always been. Yeah. Like and that's not a knock against them. Like
And Stockade have a different ownership model. It's still family owned, but they have just a slightly different ownership model. But like,
there's a few of those around Australia. Like it's the same with Vale now that they're owned by Big Foot.
Colonial's
owned by Pub Group.
All Hands is owned by Pub Group.
Yeah.
Well, the James Squire brew pub model, like the new one, and does that have a name?
It's the James Squire's Landing or
Landing.
Something.
Squire's Landing.
Yeah. So they're all run by different hospitality groups as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, Endeavour's the same thing.
Exactly.
Applejack Hospitality run the venue, but it's an Endeavour. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, the brewpub model is insane, and Inner West has changed so much.
Oh, yeah.
Source, did we even talk about Source and all of that?
Well, think about, like, we can talk about sort of the different venues
I was going to say, we talked about breweries. What about how have venues changed in the last 5 years?
Well, I mean, over the last 5 years, I'm pretty sure Bitter Few didn't exist when we started the podcast. So it's you know, that's a big... I think that's a, you know, arguably the beer bar in Sydney at this point.
That's a beer bar in Sydney.
Yeah. And I think, like, even you know.
I think there are points over the last 5 years where it's been the beer bar.
It's like, I don't want to degrade anything that Aaron does, but there's other people doing some great things.
No, I agree. I think at this point now it's splitting up again. Even 5 years ago, Royal Albert wasn't doing what it's doing now.
Yeah.
That would have been right on the cusp.
It would have been just as Mick was starting.
Yeah, they were starting to do some really cool stuff, but they.
But again, that's the start.
These days, I'm a bit biased, but they're doing a lot more interesting stuff.
So am I, and I agree. Like, yeah. I think the Albert is.
About 5 years ago, Tap House was the premier beer venue in Australia. Pump House was not far behind.
Hearts was a big deal.
Hearts was a great deal. Murray's Brew Pub Murray's Bar in Manly was a big thing.
What else?
From a bottle shop point of view,
And Beer Cartel.
They were 100%. Oak Barrel was probably just about
getting there.
Into
Camperdown
it.
was you were at Camperdown at that point,
Platinum
right?
Platinum Liquor was
the big
Camperdown
one.
Camperdown Cellars.
Funny, bottle shop wise, I think it's actually it hasn't. I mean, the addition of Bucket Boys, basically, in my opinion.
I disagree. So, you know, with work, I've been doing a lot of bottle shop tastings with different breweries and stuff.
There's a lot more.
Me and my team did 5 bottle shop tastings this week.
Yeah.
And I did one on Thursday at Bondi Beach Cellars.
Which is a great bottle shop.
Amazing.
It really is. Yeah, no, that's one of my favorites.
Not just beers, in general.
No, I agree.
I've been out to, like, Lura. Have you been to Lura Cellars?
Lura Cellars,
I went to Blaxland recently.
Yeah.
For a housewarming. And I went to the Blaxland Cellars, I think it was called, near the train station. They had a fucking awesome selection.
Dude,
I spent like 10 minutes there trying to figure out what to bring to the housewarming.
My mum lives in Borkham Hills, and the Bull and Bush in Borkham Hills bottle shop has a fucking killer selection.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like it's... And so Wenty North, like, you know, you're in the middle of Blacktown, and there's amazing bottle shops. So I think the bottle shops have always led the charge for good beer in Sydney. Before the podcast started, there was places like Camperdown Cellars and others doing some great things. But even that, like I was at Camperdown Cellars Leichhardt last night, which was never a craft beer store, their Leichhardt shop. And I was doing a tasting last night. That's some amazing stuff. Got Van Diemen 2 meter tall. They've got like, you know, amazing international stuff. They just had a shipment of Almanacs in, like... You're in the middle of Leichhardt. You know, like it's pretty cool.
I definitely agree. There's been a big... there's just more bottle shops now than ever before.
If you want to look at venues and stuff that have come on board since then, like Noble Hops, Bitter Few, even just great pubs that have got craftier and craftier, like The Welcome,
The bank.
The bank hotel. Really yeah, Uncle stuff. Hop's at the bank. Yeah.
Sweeney's.
Hotel Sweeney's. Yeah. Look,
and not, like, not to the Empire, not even mentioning all the other ones, interstate as well.
Well,
like,
not even that. It's just the non-beer venues that are now have great lists and stuff like that as well. Like, you know, just up the road, there's Where's Nick, which is a wine bar that has awesome local beers. P&V, which is a natural wine
place. And they've got an incredible beer selection.
I've got really good beer selection.
That's actually, spoiler alert, that was my recommendation.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So I think in that sense, the Sydney scene's changed phenomenally. And, you know, we can't really speak on great authority about the rest of Australia as well. But
I do notice every time I go to other cities, like I've been to Adelaide a few times over the last couple of years, and every time there's just more and more venues for me to visit. Like a few years ago, I went and I spent the whole weekend at the Weedy and I loved it.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah.
But then I went again and it was like, went to the Weedy for a bit, but then I was like told you have to go to Enola and a bunch of other places, and then I went again and there's just even more places, and of course I always go to the Weedy when I'm there because it's so Weedy. But it's also really interesting, you know, just on that point, the Weedy is I think a really good microcosm for that shift towards the brew pub model. That used to be a pub where they specialized in getting beers in from everywhere and having an amazing lineup. And now
they still do.
They still do.
Yeah.
But their focus is much more on brewing those beers themselves, making amazing beers themselves and selling them.
But
in
then,
pub.
You know, and the Weedy was always great for getting those brewers into the Weedy. And now they're still doing that, but they're brewing a beer with them.
Exactly.
While
they're there. It's so cool. And I've never had a bad beer from the Weedy. Like, they've always made good beers.
If you look at the IBA conference last year on the awards, and they won championship small brewer, and you know, I was working with them, so I was helping run the bars for that. And so basically, I had all the kegs I was just rotating through in a couple of different bars, and then they were like, "Here's all the gold medal kegs, like don't put them on, but as they get announced." So basically, as the idea was, as they were announcing a gold medal, I was trying to put that beer on. And so like half an hour before it starts, I go, "Here's all your gold medal kegs, like hide those." It's like Weedy, 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 Weedy. It's like, holy crap.
It's so good.
Quick break.
Take another a quick break,
finish our beers.
Move on to the next beer.
We got a couple of beers left.
We do.
Sessionable.
Hey everyone, it's Adrian here, letting you know that Sessionable is coming back to the Victorian High Country this June for the Darker Days Festival. So last year was pretty awesome, and this year it's set to be even bigger and better. Bright Brewery are building from the success of the inaugural festival and promise to bring you more of everything for Darker Days too. More dark beers, more food, more banter, more fire. And Dave's Travel and Events Group have upped the game to put together a huge 3-day tour with buses leaving from Sydney and Canberra. Not only will you get transport down to Bright and VIP access to the festival, but Dave's will also sort out your accommodation for both nights, treat you to a brewer's dinner on the Friday, and take you on a grand tour of the High Country Brewery Trail. And that's just some of what's included in this great package. It's going to be epic. I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope to see you all there. Seats are limited, so secure your spot now at daves.com.au.
And we're back again.
We're back again. Thanks for that awesomely read ad, Adrian.
The what?
The ad just read.
Oh, Darker Days,
How
fun's Darker Days going to be?
It's going to be sick.
Yeah.
Actually, if we're doing a retrospective, we need to talk about Dave's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a sponsor.
What a huge... Yeah. So,
We've almost doubled our episode count in the last two years.
So I don't think we've talked candidly about the sponsorship on the podcast since we've got it.
We kind of have.
We haven't shied away from it, but it's been... I honestly think it's been such a good thing for this podcast. It has... I think we all take it a bit more seriously now that we're sponsored, which means we're putting episodes out more often. And I don't know. I don't know if the listeners necessarily agree with me on this, but I think the quality of our episodes has gone up as well.
Having this money to buy better equipment, which I think the sound quality's...
Yeah, we finally have, because like when the first episode, do you remember we were sitting around my laptop with a USB hub and Logitech
$20 headsets.
Headset microphones?
I still use that at home.
Yeah. Is that what you do the ad reads on?
No. No, I use the new equipment, but I could.
And on, like if you go through the episodes, because that was a big criticism that we faced from people who listened to us in the early days was, you know, the audio quality wasn't great.
I don't know if I could go back and listen to an episode now.
I know I couldn't. Yeah. But again, that's how podcasts start. It's not something I really have a problem with, but I now am really happy with what we're doing right now. And also, so Dave's is a huge part of that, but also I think we need to just give a huge shout out to Adrian.
Who is the
producer. Like, sorry, Lee, but Adrian, Adrian is the actual producer of this podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah. And he does all the work.
And it is pretty time-consuming, but I do want it to sound as good as possible as well.
You do a fantastic job.
Yeah, you have.
You've definitely done a great job.
And I'm always like, oh, it comes down better. And the group chat would be evidence of that. Like, every episode, I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Especially the ones
filling with your
mic.
We should probably talk about the beer we're drinking right now.
Oh, yeah. So,
which is probably a good segue to...
So we raided the fridges at Bucket Boys to buy a bunch of beers for this episode. And I bought the 8-Bit, which is a New England IPA that's an 8-way collab between...
And it's sort of like a who's who of brewing.
Of New England IPA brewing. Yeah.
I guess they brewed it at BrewDog, but it was BrewDog, Cloudwater, Brewery, Daya, Magic Rock, Stillwater, Seven Sun, and Northern Monk.
And it's tasting
pretty tasty.
It's about 2 months old at this point, right?
I think so.
Yeah. From what we can gather.
It's a July best before, and I think it says...
May.
Yeah, May. I don't know.
Or March. March.
I think it says March on the can, but I don't know the coding. It's still tasting good, though. It's not tasting stale or anything. And yeah, I think one of the big trends in the last couple of years, especially in Australia, has been, you know, trying to follow the American trend of New England IPAs.
Well, I mean, five years ago, it wasn't a thing. Like, it didn't exist.
Heady Topper was
Heady Topper was
around,
a thing, but that was, like, kind of very early days.
It wasn't really a
days.
Style. It was a brewery. Like,
yeah, it was just pretty much an beer. IPA was, that happened to be hazy back then.
Yeah. The style as a this juggernaut did not exist.
Yeah.
In fact, like 2.5, 3 years old, I guess.
5 years ago in Australia, the trend for IPAs was...
Black IPAs?
Well, rye IPAs, big malty IPAs, right? Like 5 years ago. And then we got to those kind of cleaner West Coast IPAs.
Well, even West Coast IPAs back then, like...
Weren't huge.
It was maybe just taking over as a clean malt bill IPA in the vein of Pliny the Elder, whereas before that it would have been pretty malt heavy, you know, still hoppy IPAs,
but definitely with some malt character, like that maltier IPA style that's like stuff like the Jamis and the Beast, you know, that sort of style, which is apparently back.
Yeah, you guys talked about it in the Hop Harvest episode. Yeah. We've got to get them on the podcast. Hopefully during Dark Days. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
If not Dark Days, Sydney Beer Week, we can sort something out. Yeah.
But what's some other trends that we've seen come and go in the last 5 years?
Sours. Huge. In a huge way. Like, sours. Finger limes. It's the year of the finger lime.
That's next year.
Next year is the year of the finger lime.
The decade of the finger lime.
Nomad agrees with me, but
and
but no, sours in a big way. Like, 5 years ago, who was making Australian sours? 2 meter tall.
Yeah. And yeah, but not really even. Like, they were kind of making.
They were making it, but other than that, 5 years ago, who was making sours? So sours weren't a thing in Australia, at least.
How old's Watermelon Warhead? 2012?
Okay, so that's around that time.
Yeah.
For me, that's the tipping point in Australia for sours, right?
Yeah, but even then, that took some time that was a niche beer for a long time now you don't, like, no brewery doesn't have a sour.
Was La Serena thing 5 years ago?
I can't remember.
They might have been around, but they wouldn't have been doing the same level. Boat Rockers, same. They might have been around, but they weren't doing Alpha Queen and Hot Bomb and those beers.
There was Thorogood's, which we had in the first episode.
Yeah, actually, that's very true. Thorogood's was
but
not
they,
really
they were more
beer.
Of a cidery.
I wouldn't classify it.
Yeah, they had the apple.
An apple beer.
Yeah, apple beer, kind of hybrid
beer,
style.
But I wouldn't call them a brewery.
No.
I went there. They don't mash and, like, you know.
The explosion in, like, kettle sours, especially kettle sours.
Well, going back to Batch, I think Batch were the ones that really nailed kettle sales.
Well, Batch and Wayward as well, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah. Well, know. I mean, Wayward nailed, like, with a particular style, Batch just did a million.
Did a bunch. Yeah. And
like, out of the 1,000 brews they've done, how many of them are kettle sales? 100? 200? Like,
well, yeah, exactly. And, yeah. But also, you look at, 5 years ago, you go to a beer pub, how likely were you to get a sour beer on tap?
Well, we used to travel to venues because they were going to have Watermelon Warhead on tap.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Whereas now, if you go to, like, I can't imagine any sort of craft beer specialty venue that would not have a single sour on tap at this point. Like, it's almost, and if it doesn't, that seems like a weird fluke in timing.
So what about, this is a two-part question. So part one is, we've definitely seen trends come and go. So, you know, things like black IPAs, rye IPAs, Belgium IPAs. Is there any other ones you can think of? You know, that one year at Gabs where everyone's doing that one style of beer almost, or...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the two for me, especially with Gabs that stick out, are New England IPAs and Dessert Stouts, which both seem to have a bit of staying power.
Dessert Stouts crawl in a hole and die, as far as I'm concerned.
yeah, well, you know I'm going to fight you on that because I love a good dessert stout.
Look, there are good ones, but
there
as
are good
far
ones.
As...
I hate it. Like,
the popularity of it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I agree.
The formula of brewing a dessert stout to win Gabs is what frustrates me.
Yeah, but, like, you know, it's not the brewer's fault that it wins.
No, but there's a formula now to win. Like,
sure.
Yeah.
But, it's like, if you can figure that formula out and you use it, like, it's not your fault for doing that. Like, it's...
You're playing the game, yeah.
Sure.
But I think it goes against what the whole idea of it in the first place.
And I can tell you, like, I can tell you my favourite dessert stouts are not ones that have won Gabs, right?
Yeah, but that's not the reason why you like them.
Well, what won Gabs last year?
Mountie.
Yeah. Maple stout.
It's an imperial stout, though.
Yeah. It's like, still fucking
but
still, sweet.
Yeah,
it's dessert.
It's pretty sweet.
That,
yeah,
that to me is like
so.
The epitome
name,
of that.
Name me one savory dish that contains maple syrup. Pancakes are not. No.
Pancakes are not savory.
And chicken and waffles are still dessert. I don't care what you say. what was before that? I mean, other ones that come to mind is praline. Yeah. Rocky Road, white chocolate stout.
But I mean, before that, taco and...
Well, so the white chocolate, it was a white chocolate raspberry pilsner, not a stout.
It was still a dessert beer.
Yeah, but it was a... I think that's the best of the dessert beers to win Gabs, by the way, in my
Which
opinion. Bacchus, white chocolate raspberry pilsner.
That was a great beer. Yeah.
But like before that, it was taco and Gunna Matter, right?
Gunna Matter
I mean, it hasn't always been the case.
Did taco win Gabs?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty
you
sure.
Did? Okay.
Yeah. But it did, right?
I don't know. Yeah. I think it was really popular. I don't know if it actually won Gabs there.
Good question. Anyway, we'll look that up.
I'll let it out if it didn't.
Yeah. but I think there's a theme there with Gabs beers. I mean, the whole thing about winning Gabs is you need to be able to present the most flavor in the smallest package, right? Like, it's to win Gabs, you need to be able to have your beer
stand out in a paddle against
in a taster
in a paddle in a 30 mil taster, like in a shot in a shot that you'd usually reserve to
odds
spirits.
On that person, like, who's having that beer is probably going to have what, 6 paddles on
exactly
average,
yeah.
Right,
like, so you need your and the way to do that is to just have the most flavor packed in, and the easiest way to do that is make it sweet. I'm not saying that's a good thing, that's just the way to win Gabs.
So okay, formula. So is the formula, rather than saying have it like the sweetest thing, because we're talking about 30 mil tasters, is the model base it on a successful shot rather than a successful dessert? Is that the actual
maybe
model?
Have you seen?
We'll give it a
has
go.
Anyone figured this out?
Should we try and collab with the brewery for next year
do a
wet pussy beer?
No.
No.
No, it's Cowboys.
Cocksucking Cowboys.
Cowboys, yeah.
Cocksucking Cowboy. A Jaeger Bomb beer.
Nah, no, because the new formula is you have to have a Simpsons reference, so we have to do the Flaming Moe.
Yeah, the Flaming Moe.
Finette beer.
Finette beer.
Well, I was going to say, did you see what Pirate Life's Gabs beer was?
No.
It's a collaboration with Montenegro.
Yeah, sick.
Oh, I did see that, actually. Yeah, no, I'm really excited for that.
Which is basically Italian Fernet.
Yeah.
Or it's another Italian aperitif.
Amaro.
Amaro, whatever you want to call it, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I guess my vote.
Well, yeah, we need to try.
Are you going to Gabs?
Maybe. I don't know.
So, the That was a long-winded first part of that question.
Yep. What was the question?
I don't remember the question. Talking about fad beers.
Oh, how to win gabs. Okay.
Fad beers that have come and gone, as in black.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, which styles? Yeah.
Loaded question: is New England IPA a fad style, or is it hanging around?
It's hanging around.
It's too easy drinking. It's too easy drinking. The well-made ones, anyway. It's too easy drinking to not hang around.
I think it's the same as asking, like, if you asked 3 or 4 years ago, are clean, you know, low malt West Coast IPAs a fad, or are they sticking around? Like, they're sticking around because it's a good style of beer that, when made well, is very good. Like, it's the same. You know, I think New England IPAs, again, when they're made well. And if you take the right steps and you make them as the best beer you can, it's a very good style of beer that will stick around because it's really approachable. The low bitterness angle, especially, I found means that it's a great gateway style of beer. But it's really cool. It's one of the first gateway styles of beers that I've seen that is that crossover that like beer nerds fucking love.
Yeah.
And you can also give to someone else and be like, just try this. It's not because the thing is with other IPAs is they're bitter and bitterness,
and even pale ales,
and even, you know, sours and like sourness and bitterness are flavors that humans are sort of wired not to enjoy to start with.
It's a natural defense mechanism, right?
Because
poisons are sour,
exactly,
and
bitter as well. And
sorry, bitter is what I meant. Yeah.
Well, no, sourness and bitterness.
Sours off,
bitter is poison, and so you're hardwired to not enjoy them. A New England IPA is a really tasty beer that is not sour and it's not bitter, and so it's got that sort of like just that base instinct. This is tasty, like it tastes like fresh fruit juice, which is something that we like. But also, it appeals to the beer nerd. Like it's I don't know if there's maybe some other, like Saison is probably a one that can do pretty well as that crossover.
It hasn't in Australia, though.
No, it hasn't.
Which is weird.
And Hefeweizen's one as well, I think. But like both Saisons and Hefeweizen's don't sell. They just don't.
I think Australians have a thing with yeast character. Mm-hmm. Like strong yeast character is fairly off-putting for mainstream Australia.
Which I always find weird because like one of the most popular beers in Australia is Cooper's, which has a yeast character.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
Then that goes to the fact that, like, I think that's why hazy IPAs are so easy to take up in Australia because we
have... we're okay with haze. We're okay with cloudiness. I think New England's are here to stay, if only because of their crossover appeal. Like, it is...
Is Stonerwood Pacific Ale the first New England IPA in Australia?
No!
No, because Cooper's Pale Ale is the
first.
Yeah,
true.
It's dead yeast cells. It's not...
So, wait, no. Let's reverse that. Is New England IPA just a copy of Cooper's Pale Ale?
Whoa!
Mic drop.
Well, actually, if we're talking about trends of the last 5 years, how do we feel about Pacific Ales?
There's only one. That's how we feel. I mean, and there's no conversation.
There's a few that's marketed themselves as Pacific Ales, but I don't think it's gotten as much traction as New England IPAs have in the last couple of years.
Well, Pacific Ale is still an Australian thing, right?
It is still an Australian thing.
I don't know of a brewery outside of Australia doing a Stone and Wood.
And I think the people that have been trying to copy Stone and Wood and calling themselves Pacific Ale, and you know, we won't get into the whole legal debate behind Pacific Ale, I think they're doing it purely for...
cynical marketing.
Numbers.
Yep.
Rather than trying to make a beer that beer lovers would love.
No, well, it's the same thing as New England IPAs. It's an easy-drinking beer that's approachable to the mainstream market.
It is an easy-drinking beer, but like, if it was such a big kind of draw, why doesn't every brewery make a Pacific Ale? It's because they...
out of respect for Stonewood.
Well, yeah, exactly. So all the microbreweries go, you know what, Stonewood... they can have their thing because fucking right on. They helped build this industry.
But like a lot of breweries have made beers that are very similar and they just haven't called them. Like, I mean, going all the way back to 5-6 years ago with Riverside, 69 is very close to...
Oh, yeah. It was a Pacific Ale style.
But they never called it 69 Pacific Ale. They called it, 69 Summer Ale, which is a good name for that beer. And it's, you know...
Pacific Ale was a very specific ale. And on that note,
should we take another break?
Yeah.
Let's take another break. Move on to the last God, I hope it's the last beer.
I guess we'll do recommendations next.
Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah,
God, this has been a long episode.
Sessionable.
We're back, hopefully, for the last time.
God, I hope
not
so.
Ever. Like, this, we're
for
this episode. What are we, back
what are we running at? We're over an hour. Fucking hell.
So Brad has been sitting here quietly the whole time. He just had to run out, so you're not going to hear him.
At all.
He just had nothing to say all day.
Yeah, he's moving house for like the third time since he's joined the podcast.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even there from the start, so.
I was going to say, it's like one of the best things that's happened since we started Sessionables, having Brad on the podcast.
Yeah, I agree.
Like a voice of reason.
Yeah.
I actually really like, so I love having Brad on, and he's not listening to this, but he's great. Because the three of us, especially the last couple of years, we're all sort of inside the industry.
Yeah.
And Brad is just as knowledgeable, is just as passionate, but
doesn't work in the beer industry.
Yeah, which,
he has
which
that
is
at other perspective.
Yeah. Which is always,
which is good because we can get lost in the inside sometimes.
Yeah, right? And just talk about, we get bogged down in the minutiae of stuff that like people don't actually care about. Like, you know, I know I'm guilty of doing that.
You no.
Thanks, Liam. Yeah. but it's always good having Brad on. So yeah.
he brings it back down to earth, like by recommending underwear, for example.
Again, like I don't know if I've said this on the podcast, but Brad's recommendation for Uniqlo underwear, I 100% back. I'm wearing them right now.
Can you stop telling me what underwear? That's something I do not need to know, Tom. But I think Brad's being an addition to the podcast has been one of the best things ever.
Hopefully, something I think we're all aiming for in the next 100 episodes at least is expanding the voices that are part of the podcast. I think that's it's something we've been working behind the scenes on and just haven't gotten there, which is a, you know...
We'll get there.
For many reasons, but we will get there, and it's something we are all pretty passionate about.
It's definitely important to get more representation in the podcast,
and just more interesting voices. Like that's what it's about.
More interesting than us, anyway.
Yeah. Not that we're not interesting voices.
No, we're shit.
So
maybe Lee can finally speak.
Fuck
it. Oh wait, no, he has spoken on the podcast.
I said interesting voices. Well, what are we drinking for this last beer?
So I was going to say, what are we matching with our recommendations for this 100th episode?
Because this is incredible. This is...
Thanks, Lee,
for
do you want to tell us about
one?
This beer?
Yeah. No.
So it's Hermitage is a brewery, and it's the Orpheon Ale Aged in Wood. It's from California, from San Jose. That's about as much as I know about it. And it's brought in by Redwood.
Yeah, it's a 11% sour, like a golden sour.
Yeah,
it's an ale aged in wood.
Yeah. On the retrospective theme,
11.6%. By the way,
this is the type of beer I would have been like all over 5 years ago. I'm still all over.
I mean,
now,
exactly.
But this is like, you know, I've kind of dialed it down in terms of what beers I'm after these
days. 5 years ago, getting this beer would have been, it would have taken you, like you would have had to be at Platinum Liquor on the right day.
Yeah.
Whereas now, we just walked into Bucket Boys and we happened to find it on the shelf. It's like, the way to get beers like this, between now and 5 years, 5 years ago, like to get a beer like this was a struggle. And if you did, it was like a holy grail.
Yeah.
And now we can get it whenever we want, basically. Like, not necessarily this beer, but we can get beers of this caliber, this quality, whenever we want, which is huge. It's,
Yeah, if you miss out on this beer, it will be another beer that's this crazy.
The other thing as well is, like, you don't need to drink as many international beers because the quality of what's being made locally is, I don't feel like I'm missing out by not drinking international
beers. That's it. It's like, a beer like this is fantastic. It's beautiful, but... Like, there are Australian producers doing beers of this quality, and we're 5 years out. They absolutely weren't, you know.
But the other thing is that I'm sure I've said this on multiple episodes, but, like, we're still a young, developing beer country, and you need to be trying what's happening at the rest of the world to get an idea of what you're doing and take stock and stuff like that as well. So I think it's great, and, the quality of beers and just the general punter's knowledge of freshness and stuff like this has got so much better. Yeah. There's still a long ways to go in how we look after our beers in general, but I think we've improved phenomenally.
To kind of wrap up the retrospective thing, I also think that the The from a industry point of view, the infrastructure behind the scenes to keep beer fresh has improved so well. Like, you've got companies like Motus Transport doing, you know, cold storage and delivery.
I don't think they're doing cold delivery.
Yeah, I think they are.
Yeah, they've got cold trucks. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Not all their trucks are cold, but
that's cool. That's awesome.
And it's, you know, which is just means that, like, when I get my beer, I get it cold and fresh, go straight in my cellar, and it's cold. And, you know, I have beer that stays cold. Whereas, again,
5 years ago, having a distribution company that even had knowledge about that as being an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, do you guys see that Gary from Tesco's tweet a couple of months ago?
What? No.
So it was like some guy from Tesco's is like a supermarket chain, like Coles or something in the UK. And someone tweeted Tesco's going, oh, you know, all your beers are warm in the fridge. You know, it'd be such a waste. And this, like, someone tweeted back from Tesco's going, oh, thanks. You know, our fridges are all full up with all our fresh produce. By the way, beer doesn't need to be in the fridge. Thanks, Gary from Tesco's. And it just started this, like, Twitter storm of amazing.
I think BrewDog replied to that.
Also sells beer in the Tesco's. Regardless. But it was the fact that, like, a company as big as Tesco's.
Yeah. Doesn't it?
Poor Gary just like, he doesn't need to go in the fridge. What's going on? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So it just highlights how things have changed.
But I mean, I think it is only just recently in the last few years that people in Australia have just realised that not refrigerating beers affects it in a negative way. 100%. Especially hop forward beers.
But the thing is, like, we're a fucking hot country and we're so fucking far away from everything else.
I know. Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. We should be leading the charge in this stuff.
I think in a lot of ways we do. Like, I think the fact that there are a bunch of breweries that are cold from
the fact that Feral go across the country cold, and get stored cold.
And I know a lot of local breweries as well are very passionate. Like, everything is cold in the brewery, and they might not necessarily have refrigerated vans, but they make sure their trips are short. And so by the time they get, like, they're not losing temperature in a big way.
We're still behind the eight ball, particularly in the US and things like that. But Australia has its unique challenges. We're a big country and all our populations are really, really far apart.
Yeah.
Spread.
Yeah.
And it's a big fuck off hole in the middle. I mean, like, nothing in it.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Like, yeah. Think Feral, like, they go from West Coast to East Coast, you know, cold shipped. How many breweries in the US do that one coast to the other?
Well, there's not many breweries that have a distribution chain that goes that far. No. So that's the issues of Australia.
That's what makes Australia.
It's so much easier when you distribute to three states that are the size of ACT. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and like, that's what it's like over there. So, it's just like, that's what I'm saying. It's not like we're behind because of our effort. We're behind because we have a unique set of challenges.
I think if you take those challenges into account, we're ahead. But there's, you know, that in terms of quality of beer, we'd be behind.
But there's been cold storage from point to point in the US for like 15 years. Like, Stone, for the last 10 years, have had all their delivery drivers as certified beer servers in Cicero.
Yeah,
name a venue that has 100% certified beer servers in Australia.
Yeah, no.
So, we're talking about delivery drivers. So, we are behind, but, like, you know, we're a young country and all this stuff as well. But
100%.
I think the fact that this is even a conversation that people are talking about means we're on the right track.
Well, should we wrap up and head to recommendations?
Yes.
Sweet. Beer recommendations first.
I'll go first. I'm going to recommend a beer that's been around for a while. And I think we might have had it on the podcast once, and we definitely mentioned it before, but Mornington's Squid Rising, New England IPA, and it's kind of coming out more frequently these days, and it's one of the better ones in Australia in terms of that style, and I've been really enjoying it recently.
I've really been enjoying it. It's been possibly my favorite Aussie version of the style the last couple of months. I remember the first keg, the last batch they did, we tapped it at the tap house, and I literally, like, when I was just pouring the beer through from the, like, cleanest of water to beer, and as soon as the beer came out, I could smell it, and it was like, oh, it was so good.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those styles that is like, what can you get the freshest? And for some reason, this Victorian Nipah is one of the freshest that we can get in this in New South Wales, in Sydney anyway.
I like the fact, like, there's a few breweries doing it. Hop Nation's another one, where they're not brewing it. It's not available in New South Wales all the time.
Yeah.
But when it's here, people are like, holy shit, it's back, it's back. Yeah, yeah. And you buy it and it sells out. And that's what it needs to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, for some reason, like, you know, none of the local breweries in Sydney are coming out with a NEIPA as regularly. So we kind of do have
no,
to go
it's Source's,
to...
No, Source's Bubble and Squeak. Yeah, Source. And it's not
I don't think it's one of the best
around.
Ones, but it's, one, the, it's the best one probably available regularly.
The Bucket Boys Pina Colada they just came like out with one. Again, yeah. And that was tasting so good.
Cracking beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my beer of Beer Week last year, actually.
Yeah.
That was the beer I ended up taking to that housewarming. And that was like... So going back to that... Blackland Cellars, that was like the boring option. I went with a 4-pack of that. That was a boring option from that.
The safe option.
That, yeah. That was the safe option from that.
From that
bottle.
That's it. That sums up this episode, right? Like, yeah. In terms of the changes of the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm going to go old school with my beer recommendation.
Okay.
I'm going to go for a beer that I don't know if we talked about in episode one, but it definitely is a beer that I count as an epiphany for me.
Sure.
And I had it again recently, and it is just as good as I remembered it being. Holgate Temptress.
Hey.
Nice.
I haven't had it recently.
I had it. We had it on tap recently.
Wow.
It's Temptress. It's still everything it ever was. It's still got the nice chocolatey note, but just a solid, rich porter that's well-balanced with a nice chocolatey note. Because I remember, I don't know if you remember this, Liam, but some of my first shifts at the pump house with you, and I was going through and I was trying all the beers in the fridge because that was how I wanted to sort of build my beer knowledge. And Temptress was the one I had, and I remember drinking it and thinking, and it blew my mind. It wasn't necessarily my craft beer epiphany where beer can be tasty, but it was my epiphany where I was like, well, beer can be interesting. Beer can have like.
It changes what your perception of what beer can be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Beer can be more than
just
more than the four ingredients, right? Yeah, like in that, and that was the I had it recently and it absolutely holds up. And
nice.
So that's my beer recommendation because that's an all-time favorite for me.
Awesome.
My beer recommendation is a brewery I went and visited in Melbourne last week. So I was hanging out with Tate from the Liquor Emporium here in Sydney, and a couple other guys in the beer industry. And Tate was saying, you got to come check out this brewery. It's in South Melbourne. It's small. It's fucking awesome. You got to come check it out. So we went to Westside Aleworks, which is in South Melbourne. And it really blew me away. It was really fucking cool. And it's probably the closest thing I could say is probably the Melbourne equivalent of Black Font to some degree.
Yeah.
So Braumeister system, very small, something like 15 to 20 beers on tap, and just a really great mix of different styles and stuff like that as well. And it was really cool. And the greatest thing as well is like as a venue, they had a fridge full of takeaways of just other things, of not their own beers. So like basically the owners are just like, here's beers that we really like.
Yeah.
And I had like... I think a 750ml bottle of Rodenbach for like $20 in the fridge. And like, even like we were talking to them from someone who runs bottle shops and myself and other people in the industry going, you actually need to put your prices up in your takeaways on your guest beers.
I know.
Because they are
you hate
expensive.
Me that guy. Yeah. I've seen that. I've done that recently. Yeah.
But yeah, it was just a really cool venue. And the two owners, American, we moved over here. Their brewer wasn't there, but his wife we were talking to, and she was really great. They did great food. She made us pizzas, which were like legit. But just the beers and everything there was really cool.
Yeah.
And it just like another case of point that you don't need to have a massive brewery to make really nice beers.
Yeah.
But it was just a really nice revelation from a different brewery I've never been to in Melbourne. That was really cool.
Yeah.
And if you're in Sydney and you want to try them, I know that Tate at the Liquor Emporium has got the very first of their stock in New South Wales.
Yeah, nice.
And he's basically just made them drive to Sydney with a bunch of cases. So they've got some stuff that landed last week or this week, I think. So
where's the Liquor Emporium?
So they've got a few stores. The main one, or the two biggest ones, are in St. Peter's, actually very close to where we are right now. And also next to the Meat Emporium. So it's owned by the same guys as the Meat Emporium in Alexandria. So that's their other big shop as well.
Two birds with one stone.
Yeah. Yeah, they like their emporiums.
Yeah.
but yeah, so definitely they have a few other stores as well, but that's the two that I've been to. So yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, definitely worth checking out. And if you're in Melbourne, live in Melbourne, or you're on the way, South Melbourne, go check out Westside Ales Works. It was really cool. Really enjoyed it.
Nice. Got a non-beer?
Yeah, I do. So just to back up my last non-beer recommendation, which is a book.
Like which I read, by the way, and I finished.
A sci-fi book? Yeah, what did you think?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I don't think I loved it as much
X,
as you did.
With X? Okay.
Yeah, with
I
X.
Put
with
an asterisk. We'll talk about like it.
After the episode. We're talking about it. After the
I
have another book recommendation that I loved again. And I guess it's like a kind of... I'm loving a lot of recent sci-fi slash fantasy, but mostly sci-fi recently. And it's called... The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet by Becky Chambers.
Okay.
And it's one of those kind of very, I don't want to say sparse, but it's a very character-driven novel. And there is an...
So the opposite of the last one you recommended then.
I mean, I thought that one was very character-driven.
Sure. Take it offline, boys.
Yeah. Yeah. But this one was like, yeah, so it's a crew, it's a spaceship crew that... tunnels wormholes, basically. And there is a overarching story, but it's mostly about the crew members, and each chapter is about like developing those characters and you just fall in love with the characters. Reminds me of like a kind of short series where there is an overarching story from start to end, but most of the episodes are self-contained. Yep.
Again, that sounds up my alley. I'll put that on my list.
Yep. Nice one.
My non-beer recommendation is a bottle shop. I teased that earlier in the episode. P&V in Newtown. P&V Liquor, I think it is.
I still haven't been.
I went for the first time two nights ago.
I popped in there last week, actually.
Yeah, because basically I did a stupid week at work this week. I did... more than 60 hours over 6 days, and I was wrecked.
Shazam, yeah.
I was absolutely wrecked. And so Friday night I had off, or Thursday night I had off. I worked all day Thursday, had Thursday night off. There was free Uber pool, so I was like, I'm gonna get a free Uber pool. It's a new town. Go to P&V, get a nice bottle of wine, go home, sit on the couch. That's my night.
Sorted.
Exactly what I did. I went there. Awesome bottle shop. And I just asked the staff. I was looking for sort of like a light red that I could just drink a bottle of by myself, basically.
Working in a bottle shop is like, I want a light red, I can smash a bottle by myself. Like, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, that's I can point you to 100%. 6 of those.
And it was, it was called Half Full or something was the name of the wine. I'll see if I can find. I've got the bottle at home, so I'll send it to
Adrian. To the recycling bin. And get
We'll put it in the show notes. But the wine itself was beautiful. It was a chilled Pinot Noir. It was exactly what I wanted. I got home and I smashed it myself, and it was awesome. But the bottle shop was fantastic, and I got there actually, and Beer Farm were doing a tasting, and had some of the Shiraz Weiss, which is also tasting really good.
How good is that new label?
I've got the label is so good. I've got I ordered a keg because I love Shiraz Weiss. But
my tip for P&V is if you walk around aimlessly long enough, they'll just start pouring you samples of wine.
Sick.
It was funny because
I went in there on a Friday night and I was catching up with some friends for dinner. I just got into Newtown a bit early, so I was like, oh, I'm just going to walk around here. And like, oh yeah, what do you want to do? I was like, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm just literally killing time. So like, do you want to try some wine? I was like, I'm not going to buy anything. Like, yeah, we don't care. It's like, fuck it. All right, sweet.
It was great. The person who served me actually used to work at the tap house.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Mem, I think her name was. Yeah.
You're good with names at the P&V, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm going to edit that out.
But
great. Really cool bottle shop. And again, like we were talking about just the rise in awesome bottle shops around Sydney. That's probably one of the newest ones, but it's very unique.
Yeah.
And
it's for a particular thing, and they do it really well.
Yeah. What's your non-beer?
My one is actually a YouTube channel.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
So I found it's the guy, and the channel is called Rick Beato, and he has a series on it called What Makes This Song Great. And so basically this guy is like a musician, and he has his own studio, and he'll like pick a band and then like a feature song from that band and break it down from like a instrumentation, music composition, music theory thing to explain why that song is really good.
Yeah, awesome.
And the reason I like it is because we have very similar tastes in music, and I'm assuming this guy was a massive grunge fan in the 90s because like there's a Soundgarden one, there's an Alice in Chains one.
Yeah.
He's done like a Tool one. I think he just released one the other day, which is a Nine Inch Nails one. But there's like things like Toto, there's like you know, there's some really a mix of generally rockier stuff. But he's basically this guy breaking down like a particular song and at what makes it great. So he'll go everything from music theory to, you know, this Alice in Chains one was Them Bones, which is like an amazing song off their probably their best, the first song off their best album, I think. But he goes through even like the harmony between the two vocals to the chords to the guitar sound to the bass rhythm and like everything like that. So yeah. So it's called Rick Beato is the name of the guy in his channel. And it's he's got a whole series called What Makes This Song Great. And I think he's up to like 30 different songs.
Cool. Have you ever listened to the podcast Song Exploder?
Yeah. I have, yes.
Yeah. You've recommended that before.
Yeah. Okay. I really like Song Exploder, but I just
have a very
different taste in music.
Rishikesh from Song Exploder's got a...
It's fucking hipster as fuck.
No, so I think Song Exploder is a lot more... wide in terms of musical styles.
Yeah. He does try and get...
He does have a lot of episodes that I go, whatever.
Same.
But also, like, he has a lot of episodes that I go, whoa, that's fucking awesome.
But also, Song Exploder is different because it's an interview with the artist.
Yeah, so this one's like a guy, literally, and he'll, play the drum track, play the guitar track, talk about how they mic the amp cabinets up and stuff. So, someone who's into their music stuff will really enjoy it, but it's really cool to break down. And, it's like, you find something you really like. And one of them that I really enjoyed was Blink 182...
What's my age again?
No, it was All the Small Things. Oh, one of those songs, right? And like you just write that off as being just a really shitty pop song, but
actually listening to
him break it down and what makes it really good, it's like I actually have a bit of respect for Blink 182 now. So that was really cool. But yeah, so if you're interested in that stuff and like it's pretty like guitar-y orientated songs, but it's really cool.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. That sounds really cool. Yeah,
it's actually really good. Yeah,
nice,
sweet. Thanks everyone for listening through this 10-hour episode.
No one's listening to this anymore.
Yeah. 10-hour episode after 5 years.
It's been 82 years. 84 years.
84 years.
Okay, cool.
You know what? And I think bonus points if you can find the exact minute where each one of us actually gets drunk through the episode as well.
The first minute?
Yeah, I was going to say mine's like 20 minutes before we started recording, but that's...
You came in hot. Yeah.
You can find the podcast at sessionable.net, at sessionablepod on Twitter, sessionablepodcast on Instagram. You can...
Also on Facebook.
We're on Facebook as well.
And we'd love to hear from you. Please send us it'd be really cool to have some feedback from you guys about what we're doing. Anything you think we can do better, anything you really like, questions for us to answer, all that stuff. We'd love to hear from you.
Listen to episode one and say what is bad about
don't
it.
Don't listen to episode one. I want to
hear the feedback from episode one. I really do. If you do like the podcast, please rate and review us on iTunes.
We really appreciate it. Yeah,
it really helps people find the podcast.
Exactly.
And you know what I was going to say, and thank you for those who talk to us about doing it, because I don't know about you guys, but when people go, oh, you're the guy on that podcast, I get really weirded out about it.
I love it. People come up to me and I was like, are you Tom from Session?
Yeah.
And it's always weird.
It's great. Yeah. I love it. I'm always happy. Yeah.
But, thank you for listening, because, I mean, this is it's pretty self-serving for us to do this.
But we wouldn't have been able to get to 100 episodes without you guys, without the people who are listening to this. Because, like, at some point, you're yelling into a void, and knowing that there are people listening to this and people downloading it and people who are interested in what we have
coming
to say.
Coming to live episodes.
All that stuff. It really... It's what's kept us going for 5 fucking years.
Yeah.
It's you guys. It's 100%. So we'd love to hear more from you. So please send us a tweet, Facebook message. We'd love to hear from
Smoke
you.
Smoke signals.
You want to come to do an episode with us?
Exactly.
Morse code.
And the offer's still out for American Wild Ales for the next Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We've got some cool stuff lined up, though.
We've got a pretty good... Someone came out of the woodwork with something pretty interesting for that as well.
Yeah.
That's an Adrian message about. Yeah.
No, I didn't see
we'll
that.
Talk about this.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, all right. On that note, See you all later for the next 100 episodes.
Yeah. 100 more
shit,
to go.
That's scary.
Cheers.
Yeah. All right, 4 years? 8 years? What are we talking?
I don't know.
At the rate we're going, it should be. We should get
4 years.
2 years?
4 years. No, fuck, I don't know.
That's a heck.
No. 4 years.
2 years. 2 years.
2 years?
2 years, yeah.
2 years?
4 years.
4 years.
4 years.
4 years.
Me, math,
I can't, for 100 episodes.
I'm going to say 4 years.
4 years.
Yeah.
There's 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah, it's... but then we do it every 2 weeks.
Exactly. So it's 4 years.
It's 4 years.
That's what I'm
it's saying. 4 years, yeah.
Yeah.
What did I say?
See you in 4 years.
Did I say 2 years?
Yes,
years,
you yeah. and Lee were saying 2 years. Anyway, right, bye.
Bye.